If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps is for you. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space! And I'm about to die!
We need an opening.
Found one!
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, hello and welcome back to Rebels Reactions, everybody. I'm your host, Aaron Harris, and we got a great episode to discuss tonight. I tell you, the legacy of Mandalore was a phenomenal episode. Lots of stuff to talk about, lots of twists, lots of turns, and some phenomenal lightsaber fights, not involving a Jedi at that. So let's get this discussion started. Joining me tonight, I have two great friends of mine. Who are great Star Wars fans. We have Zach and Rachel Moore joining us. How are y'all doing?
Wonderful, Aaron. How are you?
Woo!
Doing great. It's so good to talk to y'all again. Y'all joined me in the past on last season, and it's good to have y'all back. It's always great to talk to y'all. So, you know, we got a lot of Star Wars history. We met at Star Wars weekend, so... So it's always good to renew acquaintances. So let's go right into this. I mean, we got a doozy of an episode. I tell you, they're good at coming back from hiatuses with episodes that blow your mind, and this was definitely one of those episodes. Legacy of Mandalore, we go through, and basically we have Sabine, Ezra, Kanan, Finn Rao and Chopper returning to Sabine's home planet there in the part of the Mandalore system to confront her parents. Not really confront, trying to negotiate with her parents to join the rebellion and fight against the Empire. And unfortunately, the reception's not as warm as they expected. It's actually about what Sabine expected with their being attacked and parents' mother treating her like a traitor and everything. And fortunately, she does not, what does happen that she doesn't expect, she gets betrayed to Gar Saxon, and all out fight ensues at the end with Sabine and Gar Saxon going back and forth over the Darksaber, with ultimately Sabine coming out on top with a little bit of help there. Great episode. I mean, let's just jump right into it. Zach, when you first watched this episode, what were your initial reactions?
The beauty of the planet that we were on, the animation, I was struck with, and then the beauty of the sound design. I love the way that they when they're on the snow planet. I love the sort of the tranquility of the wind instead of the music under screen. These, you know, these aren't really story opinions that I have right now, but we'll get to that stuff in a minute.
Oh, of course. I mean, definitely, it's a great. The artwork in Rebels has always been phenomenal, but this took it to a new level. Just the, it was picturesque in every way, shape, or form. Rachel, what were your reactions?
I cried a couple of times during this episode. Actually, there were some musical moments that got me during some big saber battles, mm-hmm. or the big saber battle. This episode hit my emotion.
Yeah, you throw in that that sunset music cue and Rachel's gonna Niagara Falls.
Yeah,
every
I just
time.
Started crying and I was like, time. Why am I crying?
I tell you, Kevin Kiner outdid himself again. He just finds a way to outdo himself on every episode. And
oh, yeah.
And his music combined with the art, the art for this episode, and I tell you, an absolute stellar performance by Tia Sirkar, who of course
yes.
voices Sabine, was just, I mean, that was just tremendous. It just brought all the emotions to bear. I sat there and watched it, and I have to say, I teared up with you, Rachel. By the time it was all over, I'm sitting there and I'm watching what's going on, and we'll get into the nitty gritty of it all. And I'm sitting there watching, I'm going, I haven't felt like this in a long time.
Yeah.
But so let's start breaking this down a little bit. I mean, because we got a lot of interesting things going on here, as we see throughout the episode. We have Sabine starting to interact with her family, which is something she has been not wanting to do. We know family's important to her. She's a Mandalorian. That's always important. Family's always important to Mandalorians. And important to the Ghost crew itself. They're a family in and of itself. But then we start seeing her interact with her real family. We meet her brother, Tristan. And of course, eventually we meet her mother, the Countess Ursa Wren. And definitely it's an impactful moment for her because we see almost like a different side of Sabine come out. For a little bit, as she's talking to her brother and to her mom, what were your thoughts on her relationships dealing with that, Rachel?
Well, I just want to throw out that I think that Tristan is not a name in the Star Wars universe. It really bothered me. And then Zach was like, "Yeah, but every little brother's name is Tristan, like." If you have
every
a little,
annoying little brother on the way home from soccer practice kicking the back seat, this is his last name, or his name is Tristan.
Is it Tristan? But
just to clarify, there's no brother named Tristan on the other side of this, right?
No.
Okay, just making sure.
That was how Zach like tried to make me be okay with that name, but I was just like,
it didn't work.
What? And then her mom, like, I still don't know how to feel about her mom because she like. The trap just completely, or not, I guess it's not a trap. It was a trap, kind of. It's a trap. It threw me off. But also, I don't know.
Do you guys think that Sabine's mother was always really, despite the front that she was having to put on in front of everyone, do you feel like Sabine's mother was always actually on her side?
On Sabine's side?
Yeah.
No.
See, I do.
That's why I'm like, I don't like her mom.
I do because when they're on the balcony talking and her mother says something about, you know, you should have never come back, you running away, you know, even though, you know, I'm obviously paraphrasing a lot.
Puts you in danger,
but, yeah,
kind of thing.
The fact that she ran away actually, you know, helped her a lot more than anything that she could have done on Mandalore.
So you think?
Yeah, I think that was actually a very personal conversation that they were having with no walls or barriers up when they were on that balcony. I feel like that was the truth on both sides.
Hmm. Interesting.
I felt like she was snaky.
Okay. I mean, Mandalorians just there's a little bit of
yeah, but that was
abrasiveness.
That's her
yeah.
daughter.
Well, that, I mean,
I'm just mad.
Well, it definitely there's things to be mad at. I mean, she did betray Sabine, and Sabine's of course a fan favorite there. But we look at the circumstances she's dealing with. I mean, like as they explain in the episode, after Sabine apparently. I think we get some more details of why Sabine. We knew Sabine's past because in the previous episode when she was training with the lightsaber, we did know that she was talking about weapons that she had created and that how the Empire used those weapons and everything. And we find out in this episode, of course, there's the reason Mandalore is not just her family, but everybody on Mandalore considers her a traitor is because there's one specific weapon she designed that they turned, that the Empire turned and used against Mandalore. And which, you know, if, like she even says, if she'd have known they were going to do that, you know, she never would have designed it. So she's got some attachment there, detachment from everybody at that point, because she knows she's guilty for everything. Obviously, she feels guilty for everything that's happened. But her mom has also tried to hold their family together through everything. We find out her dad is being held in the capital by Gar Saxon's men, who definitely has got him. And if anything happens, he's going to be executed if they turn. They just have to remain loyal to Gar Saxon. We find out Tristan's even serving Gar Saxon so the family can maintain just a semblance of the status that they used to have. And Sabine now coming home, you know, it's she's happy to see her daughter to the extent that, you know, I'm sure deep down inside she loves her daughter, and we see that come to fruition toward the end of the episode. But she's also now has to worry about the rest of the family. How is Sabine's return going to affect the rest of the family? We got the prodigal daughter home, but now is the father going to die? Are they going to lose everything else? Are they all going to be killed? Because now, I mean, they're essentially harboring a wanted Imperial at this point. Right. So there's a lot of emotional baggage that comes along with the decision that's being made. And essentially we get back to, you know, go ahead and get this out of the way. This is our Star Trek quote for the day for this episode is essentially she was debating whether or not the good of the many outweighed the needs of the one, to quote Spock. So she was looking out for the needs of the family as a whole versus the needs of Sabine at that point, which is, I think, why she sprung the trap with Gar Saxon at that point.
Sabine's clearly capable of taking care of herself.
Oh, obviously. She's done it for how long out since she left the Academy then? She's been on her own. She's been fighting with the Rebels crew, and everybody knows she's out there. And so they know she can hold her own. Now, the Darksaber shows up. She pulls out the Darksaber, presents it to her mother. Now, of course, everybody assumed when she got the Darksaber and Kanan was training her that the whole purpose of it was so she would lead Mandalore, take control, lead Mandalore. And she winds up giving it to her mom. And are you thinking she was trying to pass the buck to have her mom take over, be the person that pushed the agenda that the rebellion wanted? Is that?
I think maybe, but I think more than anything, that was a gesture of goodwill from Sabine to her mother. I feel like that because Sabine knew the odds that she was coming up against even coming home. So she knew she had to do something big in order to get her mother's attention, or in order to get whomever's attention, to get them to listen to the fact that she needs their help. So, you know, displaying that act of vulnerability, hey, I've got this thing, take it, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I did not expect her to give it away.
No.
At all.
Yeah, that was definitely a surprise. I was not expecting that much at all. I don't think a lot of people were, because it was definitely an added twist, because she takes the Darksaber and winds up negotiating the truce with with Gar Saxon to turn over the Jedi. Of course, talking about Ezra and Kanan in exchange for letting Sabine go. So again, we see a mother trying to protect her daughter by turning over the two people that she knew would be wanted and pretty much more valuable than her daughter would be. Definitely, it's a fair trade, I guess you thought. But we know that Gar Saxon, of course, is not as honorable man as most Mandalorians think he is, apparently. And, of course, crosses the deal at that point. Basically, accuses them of harboring a fugitive and flips the book on them. What, of course, when Gar Saxon shows up and he begins flipping the page on Ursa Wren, what were your how do you feel that flip went when it came with Ursa taking control of the situation at that point?
What do you mean? Sorry. Well,
at that point, she had to make a decision at that point whether to continue to fight or not to fight. I mean, she was pretty much backed into a corner by Gar Saxon at that point, because Gar Saxon was ready to destroy the family. So she knew she was going to have to fight. And I said Ursa, and I didn't really mean Ursa. Actually, I was meaning more Tristan, because Tristan was given the option to join continue to serve under Gar Saxon if he turned on his family, or he could die with his family. And Tristan, of course, decided, you know, family first. And definitely that's a huge decision, knowing that chances are you're not walking away. Definitely showed a lot of emotion and family ties at that point. How do you feel that decision went for him? How do you think that played out in his mind?
Well, I was able to overlook the fact that his name is Tristan at that moment.
I actually thought he was going to turn on his family, but I was very happy that he did not. But that scene, the most interesting thing to me was when he turns to Sabine at first, you know, with the gun, like he's going to shoot her.
Yeah.
It cuts to Ursa. Yeah, that's her name.
Yeah.
Ursa. And just her facial expression was just really interesting. Did you catch
it? I didn't notice it, no.
Yeah, it was...
She was speechless.
Yeah, she was, like, she was hurt, I feel like. But she was, it was more of a speechless look.
Yeah.
But then when he turned back, I don't think it cut back to her, but there was, like, it was just relief, kind of. Yeah. But I thought that her reaction was the interesting one, because at that point in time, I was like, oh, she's a bad guy. Right. So I liked Tristan. I just don't like his name, but I was happy with his decision.
Right.
Of course.
Which is more important than the name.
Yeah.
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 Of course. And definitely what it seemed for there was a nice little Mando on Mando fight, which ensued as Gar Saxon's Imperial super commando troopers that we saw in an earlier episode are going mano a mano with the Wren guard, and in a nice little fight there. And of course, Ezra and Kanan are involved with their sabers and everything. Very reminiscent of this fight. Honestly, I don't know about y'all, seeing this type of the fight going on reminded me a lot of there toward the end of, or in season 5 of Clone Wars, when we have the whole Mandalorian stint where Maul took over and we have the Death Watch fighting against Maul's Mandos. Gave me that kind of Mando on Mando feel again, which was nice, because those were great series.
Man, Maul's Mando would be the best band name.
Maul's Mando? That would be a good band name, actually.
Zach did, he literally said like the same thing that you just did earlier. So
the, cause at the, you know, toward the end of the episode when, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yes. There's plenty to talk about, cause we got a lot of detail to go into. Of course, the whole fight and everything, the whole episode takes place at the Wren stronghold, which basically is their compound on the planet Nost, which is that beautiful snow planet you talked about in the opening, Zach, where it's just, I mean, it's picturesque. Anybody else get a Bond feel out of that?
A what?
A James Bond feel. It looked like something Bond would be sneaking up on
yeah.
to try to infiltrate to get somebody in gorgeous scenery. And out in the middle of the woods, nothing around for miles, frozen over lake. I mean, it was perfect. Beautiful compound. And the artwork, too. I don't know if you noticed that piece of art, which basically is a painting of Sabine's mom, Ursa, was gorgeous, just hanging up that in that tapestry piece there. Was phenomenal.
It reminded me of what's his name? Gustav Klimt painting.
Yep.
Do you know who the artist I'm talking about?
I know exactly who you're talking about. In fact, that was the inspiration.
Was it really? Okay. Whatever else, I was like, that's a Klimt painting. is that how you say his name? Klimt.
Klimt. K-L-I-M-T. Klimt.
We studied him in the old art school, but whenever I saw that, I immediately thought of the one that he did. I think it was his wife or his mistress or somebody. Yeah, he painted.
Yeah, he definitely that was definitely the inspiration for that particular piece was Klimt. And yeah. It definitely suited the fixture of that compound. It was a very plain compound. I mean, even the throne room, where I guess you'd call it a throne room, I just had one table, one chair, and that was it. Everything else was just wide open spaces.
Yeah, not much for frills. Those Mandos.
No, they're not.
Except for the painting.
Because Klimt is one of the most ornate painters.
So it's interesting that they would choose that about, you know, the.
Yeah, to be in such a bare environment, bare space. They have a very ornate.
I guess that feeling tells you how they feel about the leaders of the clan.
Well, it will keep considering everything that clan's been through. They may not have a lot to decorate with.
That's fair.
I mean, definitely it was. I mean, look at their armor too. Mandalorians have always had. I mean, look at Boba Fett's colorful armor. Look at Death Watch's blue and gray armor, and all of course Maul had the red armor. I mean, but these guys are very subtle. I mean, it's a very flat gray. It's a very light yellow. I mean, almost like they're in mourning. Almost. I mean, there's nothing bright or happy about their armor. Nothing to draw attention to it. It's not the plain white that the Imperials have. It's not the splash of yellow in there's not even enough to really make a difference from their gray armor.
It's interesting that Sabine is the exact opposite in every way, even down to her artwork and their
and
artwork.
Her hair.
And her hair, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Very
the
interesting.
Bright armor, the bright hair, the bunk on the ghost that's just all artwork.
The cartoon graffiti. Artwork.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I want to hang in our house.
No.
That okay. Would be, why not? That'd be great. I want to get her little graffiti painting of the whole crew and just hang it up here in my office. So
it's cute, but we're buying a new house, so I don't know. Can you use yourself on wall background, like wallpaper background?
Anyway,
oh, so much fun, so much fun. definitely it's a different feel for the Mandalorians having that kind of lighter armor at that point. Mm-hmm. Now we know that, of course, Tristan and her and Sabine, of course, have an interesting discussion and actually do some sparring. And Tristan's really not that bad of a fighter now. Apparently he's improved a lot since Sabine left. And Sabine even questions whether or not Tristan believes she's a traitor or not, which is always hard to, you know, when your family doesn't think highly of you, it's always hard to deal with that. So Sabine definitely is questioning Tristan as Tristan's faith in her as well. She questions her whole family's faith in her. She's always had this opinion that her, her family doesn't like her and doesn't considers her a traitor because of that. And definitely it's a hard thing to deal with when you're dealing with family that doesn't, you don't feel cares at that point. How do you think that affected Sabine's reactions coming into this whole situation?
Well, she said she was surprised that their first encounter went so well.
Yeah.
You know,
her guard was definitely up. Oh, yeah. A lot.
Absolutely. It definitely was up for good reason, too. I mean, she when they arrive, they wind up getting shot down and of course, surviving the shoot down, you know, then, of course, they get taken at gunpoint to the compound. And she even says, well, that went better than I thought. Ezra's like, seriously? This went good?
Yeah, Ezra and Kanan being the comedic relief.
Oh, definitely. Kanan and Ezra were definitely the comedic relief in this episode, which, I mean, their banter was priceless through this episode. Whether it was just, and honestly, my favorite piece between that Ezra said was right there at the beginning when they're on the shuttle and they're flying through and trying to land, and she's talks about how she needs to radio and let them know they're coming so they don't shoot them down. And she's like, he's like, ha ha, ha, that's funny. Then he's like, sits up, he's like, wait, you're serious, aren't you? You know, definitely that kind of little twist and turn right there. And even Chopper, yes, I'm bringing up Chopper, folks. Chopper even had a small role in this because he was on board the Ghost when it happened. But even part of the fight when the Mandalorians are trying to shoot him down, you have two Mandalorians land on the Ghost. And they kind of look at Chopper. Anybody notice Chopper's little paws go up like he surrendered?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A little coward. He's like, no, I'm not doing anything. Just right here. I surrender. I'm sure if he had a little white flag, he'd have been waving it. But yeah, then they blast the ship and take off. And so there's a lot of little banter through there. Ezra and Kanan, of course, in the throne room when they're talking about, you let me do the negotiating. Or Kanan trying to talk to, or Ezra, excuse me, it was Ezra talking to Tristan. He's like, so you're Sabine's brother. We never knew she had a brother. Well, not that she didn't talk about you. She just never talked about you. Not that that's a bad thing, but he counts on Kanan's like, Ezra, quiet. Less is more. Less is more.
Yeah, that was a really great, like, big brother, little brother moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was perfect. I mean, that little banter there was excellent, and definitely cracking up. And I know Dan enjoyed it. He texted me when he texted me about that too. That was a great scene in the episode there. And just so you know, Rachel, I know you didn't like Tristan early for a name for Sabine's brother. Early in the story development, according to StarWars.com, Tristan was not his name.
Oh, what was it?
Jonah.
See, I like that more.
You like that more?
Yeah.
Now I just think of Jonah Hill, though.
But, like, Tristan, not that Tristan is a horrible name, but in the Star Wars universe, I promise there's not another Tristan.
I mean, there's that. That's not a... It's not a bad thing that there's not another Tristan.
It's
but
like they were like, let's take a name from.
It's definitely not a hardcore Mandalorian. It's not like Boba Fett or Jango or
Sabine.
Or Sabine, yeah. Tristan.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like a lot of Star Wars names sound made up, and I guess I was just shocked when I heard Tristan.
To hear a real world.
Yeah, to hear a real world name.
Well, not necessarily all of them are made up. I mean,
Luke.
Yeah. Leia. I feel like Leia was made up.
No.
Was it not?
No. Sounds a lot like Leia.
Yeah, well, yeah, but
Leia's been around a long time.
Yeah.
Oh.
Han would, if you're going to go with any makeup name, I would go more with Han. Well, even Han's got a European heritage to Hans. Hans. Lando, maybe.
Yeah.
Lando made up.
Lando.
Either way.
I don't know. It just was not.
It was shocking.
It wasn't a unique name. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I understand.
God, you're going to get so many angry tweets from people named Tristan.
I know. I'm sorry, Tristan. Like, you have a great name. You're just not a Star Wars character.
We'll give you all of Rachel's contact information at the end of the show. So all you Tristans out there can let her know how you truly feel.
Oh, God.
Just kidding. Just kidding. It is a name, you know. But Star Wars is full of unusual names, so and definitely it's something that we definitely. I mean, look at Finn Rell. It's not a name that we see regularly. It's not a normal name. Speaking of Finn Rell, he's somebody we haven't even talked about yet because he was a part of this whole shenanigans as well. I just called this episode Shenanigans.
Yep. Yep.
Wow. That's shenanigans. There we go. So,
Mandalorian hijinks.
Oh, yes, yes. They'll be over here, right meow. But anyway, we go with Finn Rao. Finn Rao, of course, was a part of the crew that joint journey to Nost with Sabine and Ezra and Kanan. Of course, because of his personage, and we know that everybody thought they were destroyed. He hid out on the Ghost in a secret compartment, just like Han in Empires or Return of the Jedi or New Hope. Sorry, gosh. If I say all seven movies, eventually I'll get to the right one. yeah, but they hide in a smuggled bay, just like in A New Hope. I found that quite humorous too when Chopper finally comes out and lets him know everybody's coming. You see the little compartment crack open and shove to the side, and he comes out with his blaster. It's very, very reminiscent of what Han did in A New Hope.
Yeah.
But he went. Go ahead.
Well, oh, I was. Ray and.
Yeah, Ray and Finn.
And the Finn.
Yeah.
And the Phantom. And not Phantom Menace. I am so off my game, folks. I am so sorry, y'all.
It's okay.
This is, I tell you, man, wow.
That's 20 years late on that one, Aaron.
I tell you, man, that's just, jeez. Yeah, The Force Awakens, not Phantom Menace. Oh, man, it's one of those days, folks, one of those days. We all have them, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Well, while I regain my thoughts and recompose myself, because this is not Phantom Menace, we're going to throw it to Dan and Corey and let them fill us in on the TOPS training app. Guys, take it away.
If you are a huge Star Wars fan, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. And if you love collecting Star Wars, the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps is for you.
The best part, the Star Wars Card Trader app features incredible images from the original trilogy, the prequels, the Clone Wars, Rebels, and The Force Awakens. Every era you love is included on the app.
It's easy and a lot of fun, too. Beloved characters, key scenes, and unforgettable moments are in every pack. Open the app every day and get free credits to spend on card packs from the Cantina, trade with your friends, and make new ones along the way as you continue to add to your Star Wars collection. And it's all free.
The variety makes it fun, too. So chase what you love. Some of the latest packs include poster series, classic comic book series, helmet variety packs, and so much more. There are even exclusive cards you can get by completing sets, as well as special inserts and even autograph opportunities. Don't worry about missing the cards you love either, as you sign up for notifications right on the app.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
Thank you so much, Dan and Corey, for taking some time to give me a breather and filling us in on that Topps trading app. A lot of fun, a lot of great stuff coming out with that app. A lot of great announcements that were recently made, too, with improvements coming to the Star Wars Topps trading app. Now lock 50 cards That's coming. So definitely a lot of great stuff to do on that. But let's go back to what we were talking about before. No, I'm not talking about mixing up The Phantom Menace with Force Awakens. We were discussing Finn Rao's role in this episode prior to me getting completely bamboozled. Yes, I just said bamboozled. Deal with it. So Finn Rao, of course, we have the protector of Concord Dawn on the planet as well, and who plays actually a pretty vital role in this episode. He hides out there at the beginning, so he's not captured at the under the order of Kanan, honestly, because Kanan kind of knew they would probably need him later. And of course, it winds up being true because part of the agreement for them to enter the compound is they surrendered their lightsabers. And they were recovered by Finn Rao after he learned of the deception by Countess Ursa with Gar Saxon. He recovered the lightsabers and returned them to the Jedi there at the end, right at the beginning of the big fight scene there, which turned the tides. And of course, Finn Rao wanted revenge on Gar Saxon because Gar Saxon had eliminated his pretty much his entire all of his people, his entire force. How do you think Finn Rao felt going back to, of course, now to this planet, to Nos, but getting the opportunity to face Gar Saxon for a moment? Anybody?
I'm trying to think of his internal monologue while all that's going on. Go ahead.
I just thought it was interesting that I feel like he, because he didn't really try to fight him.
He didn't really try to fight Gar Saxon?
Did he? No. He kind of let the Wrens.
The Wrens kind of settle it
battle their issue out, because
did you guys question Finn Rao's motives at all when he was going to retrieve? I absolutely did, because I don't. Sabine's the only Mandalorian that I've ever totally trusted, you know.
Yeah.
So like when he was going around picking up the lightsabers, I was like, okay, this could go one of two ways.
Well, he looked devious.
Yeah.
He was making devious eyes.
Well, I don't think necessarily. I question his motives up until he got to the lightsaber, because we know obviously he's Mandalorian. He has honor. He has everything else that comes with Mandalore. But we also know he's got a lot of hard feelings toward Gar Saxon, being the Imperial person on Mandalore. Now, this being said, of course, I was a little off kilter for a little bit, not sure what he was going to do, because I figured at some point he would try to contact Gar Saxon and draw him out for a fight. But then, of course, when he sees that Ursa has already done that, I figure he's going to hang out. And that's what I was kind of figuring was going to happen. He was going to hang out and take a pot shot at Saxon and just end it. But then when he infiltrated the base and got the lightsabers, I knew at that point he wasn't going anywhere. He was there to help out, not necessarily exact his revenge. But I did question his motives for a little bit there, up until he actually got a hold of the lightsabers.
Yeah. See, I questioned them literally until the moment that he busted through the window. but you know, that's my distrust of Mandalorians popping up, I guess.
Well, the Mandalorians haven't been a lot of Mandalorians to trust. I mean, really, the only one we can look at outside is Sabine, who we can actually say we can have some trust in, was Satine, the Duchess Satine. But I think that more had to do with her relationship with Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan's trusted her, why everybody liked and trusted her.
Exactly. Because if Obi-Wan trusts somebody, that's good enough for me.
Unless the person's name is Anakin.
This is true.
Yeah, I as soon as that came out of my mouth, I was like, wait a minute. Is that really that smart of a thing to say, Zach? Because Anakin or...
Just Anakin.
Yeah, just Anakin. Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost said Palpatine. He didn't trust him, so.
No, you know, I don't think any of the Jedi really trusted him at all, yeah. But that's another story for another discussion, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Now, one thing I do want to bring up here that I just thought about and we haven't discussed yet, and I have – it's in my show notes, but my notes are trapped inside an iPad that is not working right now. But I just thought about it when I was looking at Gar Saxon's picture here on the website. In this episode, he gets referred to as the hand of the Emperor, or the Emperor's hand, which I found quite interesting because there's only one other person that's ever been referred to as the Emperor's hand, and that was in the Expanded Universe. And we all know who that was.
Mara Jade Skywalker.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah. Deep, huh? So, yeah. So how did you feel about that name being brought up again? And because I know Mara Jade's always been very close to the hearts of a lot of Star Wars fans out there who absolutely adored the Expanded Universe and all. And how did each of you feel when you heard Gar Saxon be referred to as the Emperor's Hand and that name being revived and canonized at this point?
Yeah, nothing is by accident at this point, I don't think. So them saying the Emperor's Hand, I don't know if that's just a subtle nod to, you know, the fanboys who want to see Mara Jade somewhere, and they're just like, oh, so the Emperor's hands do exist in this new canon. You know, that very well could have been the creator's intention here.
Yeah, but if the Emperor's hand does exist in this new canon, blah, 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 does that mean there's only one?
I don't think so.
Like, will we see her? Is she still there? Probably not. Okay.
Well, we never really got an answer in the books whether there was more than one Emperor's hand.
Right.
And an emperor does have two hands, doesn't he?
Yes.
I saw lightning come out of two of them, I believe, in the movies. So it makes sense for there to be more than one. But Gar Saxon isn't really one I would have tapped as an Emperor's hand based on what we know of what the Emperor's Hand did coming out of the Expanded Universe. So obviously the role of the Emperor's Hand is different. Maybe it's instead of being the off-the-books assassin figure that Jade was, maybe this is nothing more than just a honorable name at this point. Almost like a moth. Thoughts? Hmm.
That stands to reason to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much how I was looking at it. And it, you know, bothered me a little bit, but same point, just the fact that the Emperor's Hand is canon now is exciting. So, definitely a lot of nods to the EU happening in Rebels nowadays, which is awesome. But we end up ultimately with the fight of a lifetime here at the end of this episode. We have Sabine. Of course, Gar Saxon has gotten his hands on the darksaber from Ursa in the episode before the fighting all begins and is going after Sabine's mom. Sabine sees it, and Ezra tosses her his lightsaber, that nice green new lightsaber he has, and Sabine saves her mom. And then, of course, Saxon and Sabine have a lightsaber fight. I think that's a phenomenal thing to have again when it's not two Jedi or Sith.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's never happened before, has it?
I don't believe it has. That's just that. I do not believe it has.
Because Han used the lightsaber to cut open the Tauntaun, right? He wielded the lightsaber, but it's not really for battle.
Yeah.
And then Finn in The Force Awakens obviously used the lightsaber to battle with
Kylo.
Well, to battle with Kylo and to battle with the stormtrooper. I think it was Slip, I think is what his name ended up being. So it's, you know, it's interesting the route that Lucasfilm has been taking over the past few years since the
Lucasfilm.
Yeah, Lucasfilm.
Lucasfilm. Disney, yeah. Lucasfilm.
Yeah, since I mean, Lucasfilm's still, you know, in charge. Yeah. But since the transition, the things that they've been doing to sort of incorporate the general everyman in the galaxy to this idea of the Force and the Jedi, and, you know, does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But the Force is in everyone.
Yes.
No matter who you are.
And so now we get to see two Mandalorians having a battle, one of them wielding a lightsaber, one of them wielding a weapon that we pretty much fell in love with Clone Wars.
It's a saber.
It's a saber. It's the dark saber is still a lightsaber. It's just dark.
You're right.
So, I mean, we essentially have two lightsabers, two non-Jedi, non-Force wielders wielding lightsabers, which is awesome. And they make it a fight, too. Gar Saxon, of course, has his functional jetpack. Sabine's, of course, is already damaged. Poor girl has more trouble with jetpacks than anybody I've ever seen. Every time she gets it fixed, somebody shoots it.
Maybe she stay on the ground, because that could bode very terribly for Sabine in the future.
It very well could, but you know, she's on Mandalore now, so she'll probably get another one. But
right.
So we see them go back and forth, and of course she uses the Mandalorian cuffs that Finn Rao gave her in this fight, because Gar Saxon has his jetpack and he's flying around shooting and fighting her with the darksaber, and eventually she's able to tie him down and take out his pack, and it's a mano-a-mano fight at that point. And we see a very interesting fight style, because this isn't the dignified, you know, when Jedi's fight, it's very dignified, it's very one-on-one, there's no tricks, it's just a fight. It's a swashbuckling fight, essentially, is what it is. But when the Mandalorians with Sabine and Gar Saxon, this was an all-out who could pull out the most tricks out of their pocket fight, who had the best tricks up their sleeves, and which made it quite enjoyable to watch. What was your favorite moment in this particular battle, Rachel?
I loved the beginning of the battle when he is literally slicing through the snow, like as fast as he possibly can, and she is just dodging every single slice. And of course, she gets up, but I don't know. That was really intense to me, because I was like, "There's no way he didn't hit her."
Right?
There's no way she can move that fast.
Yeah, he really sliced up that snow really quick.
Yes. With
that dark saber, and it definitely was very well. He wielded it very well, and Sabine held her own too. Which was quite impressive. Because matter of fact, we end up with a traditional moment we see in Star Wars there, because we see Sabine coming out on top with both the dark saber in one hand and the lightsaber in the other, and she's got the blades crossed Gar Saxon's throat, that nice little X thing we saw Anakin do with Dooku and so forth, and definitely
and Maul.
Yeah, Pre Vizsla with Maul. So definitely it's very much a staple scene that you see in Star Wars. Who thought she was going to take his head?
Me.
I didn't.
You did it? 50-50. I gotta say, I was borderline on it. I wasn't sure what she was going to do. You know,
it was a pivotal moment for her character development, for sure.
Oh, absolutely, because she could have gone either direction. She would have gone. Was going to change her path at that point. And of course, she doesn't take his life, because you know she even tells him, she goes, that's the Mandalorian way, but that's not me. That's not who I am now. And she deactivates the sabers and turns and walks away. Can you imagine how much different her life would have been if she had taken that head and just sliced it off just like Anakin did? Because, it would have changed everybody's outlook on her at that point. Because essentially she would have defeated Saxon, which she did defeat Saxon. Hands down, she did defeat Saxon, but she would have done it the Mandalorian Exactly. She beat him in a non-traditional Mandalorian way. If she'd have taken his head, that would have, I mean, that really would have cemented her in the eyes of the Mandalorians, and could have made things different for future episodes when it comes up that she was the one that took out Saxon. Imagine how much more clout that would have been if she'd have taken his head.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't think about that.
So
heavy stuff.
Very, very deep stuff to look at for a kid show too. I mean, It's still ultimately a kid show, and we're dealing with some heavy things here. And definitely, you have to think about the direction it would have gone, because in the process of the fight, I don't know if y'all caught it, but during the process of the battle, did y'all catch a glint of the Force theme throughout that fight?
Yep.
That was
when I was
crying.
Yeah. Oh, it was. We did perfectly. So of course we know they're not supposed to be Force wielders, but does that mean Sabine may have some Force tendencies at that point?
It's like what I was saying a minute ago. The route that Lucasfilm has been going in the past few years is that everyone has the Force. And you get to see a little glint of that in every character that you fall in love with or fall in hate with. You know, you mm-hmm. see a little bit of the Force in everybody. And I really, really dig that a lot.
Oh, definitely. And it definitely has impacted Star Wars dramatically through shows like this, where we have even have Force wielders. I mean, you look at Rogue One, the Wills. That definitely was. I mean, they're not Jedi, they're not Force, but they have a deep respect and faith in the Force, and definitely they know they're one with the Force, and the Force is with me.
Man, it's been 2 months, and I still feel dead inside.
Oh, jeez, I know. That's my thing at work now. If something doesn't go well, I just look at them and go, I'm one of the Force, the Force is with me. And I turn and walk away, just quoting that line over and over again. But, I mean, definitely was a great scene. And Sabine spares Saxon and turns and walks away. She's not going to kill him. But Saxon's not going to let it go. He's got a stashed weapon. He pulls it out. And before he can use it, you hear that shot fire. And when that shot fired in that close up on Sabine's face, I thought we had lost Sabine.
I thought she got hit. I didn't think she was going to die, but I thought she got hit.
Oh, I was positive she was hit. Then I expected Ezra to go all psycho on him and hack him into 100 little pieces.
Kids show, man.
Yeah, I know, but still, that's kind of what I was expecting at that point. You know, a little slice and dice. But you know, Ezra was, but it wasn't. You know, the shot we heard was, and the look of shock on her face wasn't from being shot. It was seeing her mom with her blaster pulled, shooting, and essentially she shot and killed Gar Saxon, saving Sabine's life. Which, again, reinforced that fact that, you know, we knew she was doing things to try to protect her daughter, but this flat out was a blatant action to save her daughter, which everybody could very well see that she did care, and there was that love there. Which leads to a very climactic, emotional ending to the episode, because as everything is tying up and the Phantom arrives so everybody can leave, and Ezra does another little smart mouth comic relief, because we've had a lot of emotions going on. He looks at Chopper and is like, after the fighting's done, now you show up. Chopper's like, of course, I'm smart. I know when to hold him, and I know when to fold him. He knows when to walk away. He knows when to run. Or in this case, wheel away. We find out that Sabine is leaving the Rebels crew, and she's going to stay behind on Nost with her parents and attempt to not only save her father, but, you know, do what she can to help Mandalore, which you know, is everybody, it was definitely a shocking moment for me. I don't know about y'all. I did not see this coming. But she'd opted to stay, and, you know, everybody, even Kanan started saying, you know, I'm proud. And she's like, don't tell me you're proud of me. it was just a very emotional goodbye at that point. And the first thing I thought of when I saw this is, because, I mean, as of right now, we have we have speculation about next season, about season four, because there has been no confirmation of season four coming out yet, which has it up in the air. Everybody's assuming we're having season four because everybody is saying the episodes are already done and in the can. But as we know from Clone Wars, not everything is guaranteed.
You got for Netflix.
And there's not always the promise of tomorrow when it comes with these episodes, even if they're made, because Clone Wars got canned after season five with half of season six already done. So definitely there's no guarantee as of right now until we hear from Disney and Lucasfilm. You know, we don't know what's happening. We just know the season ends on March 28th. Not March 28th. It's coming up the end of March.
Yeah, March-ish.
I don't have a calendar in front of me, but it's coming up sometime in March. So it's right around the corner, honestly. So for us not to have a confirmation on what's going on after that is can be a little nerve-wracking. But what got me is when we see Sabine opt to leave. To me, this was very reminiscent of Ahsoka walking away from the temple.
I was thinking the same thing.
And that to me, that was a gut check. And that's what bothered me the most, was seeing that happen. And finale is March 25th. March 25th is the finale, season finale. So what were your feelings when Sabine made that announcement?
The more that I think about it, the more that I like it. At first I was in shock just like everybody else. But the fact that she chose to stay behind and do something to help her family and do something to help her planet, she says that she thinks she can do more good there. And that makes perfect sense because, in her head, bringing Mandalore onto the rebellion could change everything. So she's still playing the long game. And the fact that her mother did what she did really brings into play some, Fiddler on the Roof type things, themes like, you know, tradition, family over tradition, things like that. And so when her mother chose to disregard the traditions that she had been so, you know, blatantly protecting for so long, I feel like that meant a lot to Sabine, even though, you know, they're wrapping up the episode. You don't have much time to see something like that. But I feel like that probably meant a lot to Sabine, which is why she elected to go ahead and stay and do something to help her family. Because a gesture like that doesn't just, you know, fly away in the wind, you know.
Rachel?
I don't think that this is the last we're going to see of her for, like, this season. Like, I feel like we're going to see her in, like, two episodes.
You think so?
Like, yeah, I think that they're going to be in touch, and she's going to need their help to get her father back. Like, I would think, you know.
That felt like the end of Sabine's story for the season, but then again, it
didn't to me. I just have a hard time believing that, but I could be wrong. I mean,
that's just for the season. I feel like. And, you know, I feel pretty confident there's going to be season four of Rebels.
But, like,
I feel like that's going to be a pretty big arc in season four. Because, I mean, you've only got, what, 3-4 episodes left? That's too big of a story to just squeeze into that much when you've got things going on, you know, on the ghost.
Okay.
That's what I, you know. Well, I hope. I would like to see, I would like to see more sooner rather than later.
Well, I know I definitely would too. So, and definitely I hope this isn't the end of what we see for Sabine, because, you know, I hope we get to see her missions and everything on Mandalore as well. So hopefully this is something that we get to carry into the future, not just through the end of this season. We get to see a little bit more of her the rest of the season, but we get to see her in the future if that does come, as soon as Disney sees fit to let us know what's going on. If you're listening, Disney, this is a passionate plea. For the love of God, please tell us.
It feels like a temporary departure. It doesn't feel like a permanent departure. God, I hope I'm right.
No. Yes, if we had a confirmation of a season four, I would 100% agree with that. Since we do not at this point, to me, it had a little more finality, like the Ahsoka walking away. At that point, I mean, it depends on what's going to happen. If we just have through, I mean, we have no knowledge of what's going on. So, if the series ends March 25th, this is going to be a huge. I mean, this is probably the end of Sabine. And I hate to say that because I absolutely love the character. Tia Sakaar has done a phenomenal job bringing this character to life and breathing life into her and fleshing her out the way she has. It has been a lot of fun watching her grow. I would hate to see anybody go anywhere, but definitely I'd hate to see her end on this, because then I want to know what happens to her.
It's worth noting, though, that the circumstances surrounding the cancellation of Clone Wars are a little bit different than just business as usual is today.
Exactly. That's very true.
I don't feel like Disney would just end a series like this. That, you know, it's not like, you know, Grey's Anatomy ratings or anything like that, but it's enough that, you know, they're going to be respectful of the fans, I would think. And if they were going to go ahead and end the series, they would give us more than a 3-episode warning. I would hope.
I would definitely hope so. Which is why I'm banking on the fact that there will be more going forward. But you know what? We just sit back. We wait for Disney to tell us what's going on and hope for the best.
Indeed.
So definitely a great episode all around here on Legacy of Mandalore. We had a lot of fun stuff happen. A lot of great things go happen in the episode. But let's look at an email real quick, because we did get email about the episode, which definitely we want to take a look at real quick. Because you can always send your thoughts into Rebels Reactions at coffeewithkenobi.com. And there's some reasons you'll want to do that, and we'll go over that here in just a few moments. But we did get an email from Alex Dunn, who was apparently quite impressed with the episode. He said, wow, what an emotionally driven episode. Love seeing family ties of the Wrens and Sabine wielding a lightsaber. Of course, he calls out the nod to the Anakin crossing of lightsabers against Gar Saxons. Very cool episode. It was definitely what he thought. It was very cool. He thought it was very interesting when Kanan pointed out to Ursa that if she would choose the Mandalorian customs over her family, and of course she ultimately did choose her family. He says he respects how Sabine chose family too, but I have a feeling she will return during a pivotal moment by the end of the season. And he cannot wait. Thanks, Alex, for sending that in. Definitely appreciate your thoughts on the episode. It was definitely very interesting how Kanan basically asked her if she was going to choose between her family or Mandalorian customs. That was something we didn't mention. So I'm glad he brought that up. Very poignant question at that point. It's like, who are you going to choose? Are you going to go with your history, or are you going to go with your family? It's blood thicker than customs and traditions at that point, which was obviously for her wound up not being true. Very poignant at that point. So let's go through here and take a look at our final thoughts on the episode. we'll start with you, Zach. What, looking at the Legacy of Mandalore, what were your final thoughts on this episode?
It's just like I said a minute ago, the theme that I feel like we're left with is the moral of the story, I suppose, is kind of like Alex was mentioning, the question of family over tradition or tradition over family. I feel like that's something that resonates really, really well with a lot of people, myself included. And that's interesting to see play out in a family of Mandalorians. That was interesting to watch. And I'm very pleased with the way that it turned out. I'd like to see, I can't wait for more of the Ren story. I can't wait to meet Sabine's father, hopefully, and find out a little bit of the story that was going on there.
Excellent. Perfect. Perfect. Rachel, your final thoughts.
I really liked this episode. I do want to ask that question about the music for Sabine's mom, because it's just like, it's been my main thing about this episode. But
besides Tristan,
but we were talking about it during the break. If anybody knows okay, Sabine's mom's entrance music was very familiar, and it sounded like some Kylo music in The Force Awakens, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah,
the underscore. So if anybody knows anything, let us know, because that was just really interesting to me.
Exactly. Now, point of reference, you're talking about the scene where they first show up at the compound and
the
doors open and you see her come out, but you're just seeing her by the boots as she's walking out to the stairwell. Okay.
That exact moment. It's that. Yeah, that music.
Okay.
But I loved this episode. And I think we're going to see Sabine again soon. So that's just my thought. Well, I agree with Alex.
I definitely hope so, and I definitely hope Alex is correct. We do get to see her again by the end of the season. But overall, this was a great episode. A lot of emotions up and down through the whole thing. Some nice banter between Kanan and Ezra. And definitely it was a lot of fun in this episode. One thing I gotta say, though, I think this is the first episode where we have not seen Hera or Zeb in any way, shape, or form.
I noticed that.
And which struck me as odd, because even in other character-driven episodes that they're not involved in, you at least see them or at least hear from them for a few moments. And we had no mention, no nothing of Hera and Zeb. So who knows where they are right now.
Usually they're around for at least some sort of exposition at the beginning of an episode. Oh, you're going here? Yeah, we're going here. You're going there? Okay, let's all go there.
Exactly. And that was missing in this episode. So I found that interesting. So, but no Ezra, no Hera, no Zeb. But definitely a lot of fun in the episode. I think the complexities of the relationship between Sabine and her parent and her family. I don't think we're done with that. I think there will be more to come as time goes on, because I don't think we've seen enough. One fight's not going to change the years of treasonous thoughts. So,
what a line, Eric.
Well, essentially, that's what they've had. They've thought her a traitor for how many years now? So one good action isn't going to negate the years of negative thoughts going through their head. And it definitely is not going to, especially once they start interacting with other Mandalorian clans, how's that going to influence their actions and treatment of Sabine at that point? So I think we got a lot to explore in this storyline. Definitely can't wait to see where it goes. And I hope we do wind up seeing the rescue of Sabine's father. I'd love to see not only who he is, but see who has him and how things are going to go now that there's a power vacuum on Mandalore.
Because Ben Rao basically was, Freddy foreshadowing. He said that there will be all out chaos when it gets out that Gar Saxon has been killed. Oh, yeah. So we'll, I mean, we're sure to see or at least hear something about that, you know?
Oh yeah. And Mandalore being such a warrior driven society, that Empire is not going to let that slide at all. They will have to intervene at some point. So definitely it'll be interesting to see how that influences the storyline going forward as well. Mm-hmm. So definitely, I love the episode. I thought it was great. A lot of fun, a lot of excitement, a lot of emotion, a lot of questions still to be had. That's what makes Star Wars great, man. If you can enjoy it and still walk away with questions that once lead you wanting more, they've done their job. And they definitely did that in Legacy of Mandalore. Grading the episode, of course, we know we grade every episode of Rebels as we review them. For me, I'll go first because this was a great episode, in my opinion. A lot of depth, a lot of fun. I'm going to have to go with an A on this. This was a really good episode. It left you feel good. It made you laugh, made you feel good, and broke your heart all at the same time. And definitely a mark of a good episode. So definitely an A from me. Rachel, how about you? How would you grade the episode?
I give it an A, a solid A. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Zach?
I give it a B+ because I compare every episode of Rebels at this point to I believe it was the episode that we were on the last Rebels reactions we did with Callus and Zeb.
Yeah.
That was a great episode.
So like everything at this point is just.
I thought this one was better than that one.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know. I love Callus. I love him so much. Yeah. But.
It's a B+. It's not like I'm failing the episode.
I know. Yeah. I know.
No. That's what's great. We all have different opinions, and that's why we do this. And Callus is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, he's advanced quite a bit since that episode y'all were last on talking about the honorable ones from mm-hmm. last season. A lot of fun things have happened. He's now an agent for the rebels. He's a fulcrum agent. And as a matter of fact, the next episode, if you watched Rebels Recon from StarWars.com, Rebels Recon, they actually showed a clip from the next episode, and it actually looks like it's going to be a Callus-based episode. So
I haven't seen that clip yet.
Oh, pull it up, watch it.
I'll pull it up. I saw it earlier.
It didn't tell me?
I didn't watch it. I saw it.
Oh.
I didn't watch it.
Watch it. It looks really good. So that'll be next week's episode, but definitely that's going to be fun to address. But one thing we do want to talk about before we go into closing up and wrapping up the episode, yesterday, which was Sunday, we, here at Rebels Reactions, we announced our new contest. If y'all remember a couple months ago, we did a contest where we gave away a 3¾-inch Sabine Wren action figure, and Chris Case won that figure at that time. And I told you then we were going to do another contest, and it was announced yesterday and is underway. And this is going to actually go on for a while. This is going to be a multiple week contest. This is actually going to go through the second to last episode of Rebels, okay, of the season. So the final episode, the season finale, is on the 25th of March, I believe it was. Let me look back at my calendar. Yes, March 25th is the season finale. And so the week of March 18th, which will be the second to last episode, that will be your last opportunity to enter the contest. We're giving away a Rebels prize pack. So what's going to happen is all you need to do to enter is watch Rebels. Once you've watched Rebels, go to your phone, go to your tablet, computer, whatever you use to send your emails. Email rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. Give us your thoughts and opinions about that episode, just like Alex did earlier. And we wound up reading his email here on the air. And of course, your email, of course, once received, definitely could be used in the episode. But every email goes into the drawing, okay? And the drawing, of course, will be happen, and you'll win this, and one person will win this prize pack. Now, like I said, the second last episode's on the 18th, so you will have till noon on March 20th. Noon on March 20th to submit your final email, okay? Because on Saturday the 25th, the day of the finale, we will do a live stream before the finale airs, and we will announce the winner of the contest, okay? And we got some great prizes lined up right now for you. Right now we have the prize pack can grow. It is flexible. It can grow. It's going to be at least what I tell you right now, but it could grow, because if I find other stuff I want to give you, I'm going to throw it in there as well. But it will all be Rebels related. Right now we have a Ahsoka Tano Hot Topic exclusive Funko Pop, which is in the prize pack. We have a Sabine Wren 3 3/4 inch action figure, the Kanan Jarrus as a stormtrooper 3 3/4 inch action figure, and who remembers the poster that broke the internet a couple months ago with the Saw Gerrera poster, which came out early. Somebody gave it to me at Toys R Us and broke the news that Saw Gerrera was coming to Rebels. I have an extra one of those posters. That's part of the prize pack as well. And who knows, it may grow from there, but that's just what it is as of right now. So definitely send us your thoughts each week after Rebels is over. I do, for shipping costs, I do have to limit this to listeners in the United States. I would love to ship something international, but I was checking prices and it would break the bank, unfortunately. So right now we're limiting this to listeners in the United States. But send us your thoughts, send us your opinions. Alex, you are in the drawing. You are the first person in the drawing, so congratulations. But send us your thoughts. Get this contest going. It's going to be a lot of fun. Besides, who doesn't want to go home with free stuff?
I certainly do.
I don't know anybody that doesn't like free stuff. And this is free stuff. All you got to do is send us the emails with your thoughts each week after Rebels airs and let us know what you think. So a lot of fun there. So definitely we've had a great night. I can't tell you enough how much I love talking to you, Zach and Rachel. Y'all are great people and always have fun talking to you guys. If somebody wants to continue the discussion with y'all off the air or let Rachel know how much Tristan is a wonderful name, how would they go about getting in contact with you guys?
On Twitter, I am Hey Rachel Moore. And
on Twitter, I am at Ziamo. I don't know how to pronounce it either, but it's at Ziammo.
I'm glad you said that because I couldn't figure out how to say it either. So
Ziamo.
I don't know, man.
It's Zach. I am Mo. His nickname used to be Mo.
Okay.
So that's what.
I tried to change it one time, and like people started like
everyone freaked out.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'll change it back. I'm sorry. Jeez.
I could see where that would be a little bit confusing there, and how that would be a problem. Definitely, I'm not changing mine anytime soon, that's for sure. But also, not only that way, but y'all also have a Disney page, don't you?
Yeah, we do.
So why don't you tell us about that real quick?
On Twitter and Instagram. Wait, on Instagram?
Yeah.
On Instagram, we're Craving Magic. And are we just Craving Magic on Twitter?
You know, it's not a great sign that we don't know,
I know, our handles. I'm pretty sure it's – oh, look. I can just click right here because I retweeted us today. See,
Aaron, quick distraction.
It's Craving Magic. I run the Instagram and Zach runs the Twitter. That's basically how that works.
Gotcha.
So –
oh, yeah, definitely. If you want information about Disney and just seeing what they got, check them out. Definitely. They're a lot of fun and definitely great people to hang out with. Like I said, I had so much fun meeting y'all, hanging out with y'all during Star Wars weekends, and y'all didn't miss the meetup we did at Disney, but got there afterwards. I got to hang out with y'all for a little bit too. So definitely talk to them, hang out with them, watch the check out their Disney page, Craving Magic. A lot of fun stuff there. Of course, we want to hear from you too. I gave you the email address already, rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. We're on Twitter, Rebels Reactions. They're on Twitter. If you want to get in contact with me, Twitter is at taharris121079, or of course, email me aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. Great ways to get a hold of me. Check out coffeewithkenobi.com while you're there. A lot of great things you'll find, a lot of great blogs. Check out our other shows too. Matter of fact, on the latest episode of Legends Library, I was honored to join Randy as we discussed Razor's Edge, which was and had an interesting discussion there. But check out our other shows, Legends Library. Check out Comics with Kenobi, Lattes with Leia, and of course the flagship show, Coffee with Kenobi. Check those out. Definitely, we got a lot of great stuff for you if you like Star Wars, and we try to cover every angle we can. So check it all out. And definitely, like I said, enter the contest. There's no reason not to walk away with free stuff, man. And this is just a way that I wanted to just say thank you to everybody out there listening, and definitely I hope you take advantage of it. So, Zach, Rachel, thank you so much again for joining us. It's always an honor to talk to you guys, and definitely hope to have you on again in the future.
Thank you for permitting. It's always fun to be on.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you all so much. Everybody, thank you out there for listening. Y'all are the greatest. And always remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.